From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Clint Eastwood's American Sniper is a monster at the box office. Americans and more pouring in to watch a movie about the Iraq War and famed sniper Chris Kyle, played by Bradley Cooper. It's about the war front, it's about the home front, with Sienna Miller playing his wife, and it has sparked a lot of conversation and controversy about its portrayal of a lethal killer in a tortured war. This hour on Point, unpacking American Sniper. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Have you seen it? What do you think? Is it pro-war? Anti-war? Hollywood war? Veterans, was this your war? Out there and at home. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's a scene. You've probably seen this. The trailers are all over. Sniper Chris Kyle, played by Bradley Cooper. This is from the trailer. Has an Iraqi woman and a young child in his sights. Has to make a tough call on the battlefield.
Yeah, she's got a grenade. She's got an RKG, Russian grenade. She's saying to the kid.
You say a woman and a kid?
You got eyes on this? Can you confirm?
Negative. Your call.
They fry you if you're wrong.
From American Sniper's trailer. $250 million in box office already. That's a lot of people. It may well include you. We want to hear from you this hour about this movie. Joining us now from Washington is Thomas M. Gibbons Neff. He served as a rifleman with the 1st Battalion, 6th Marine Regiment for two tours in Afghanistan. The 2nd as leader of a scout sniper team, operated as a sniper there. He's now a contributing writer at the Washington Post and a columnist at the War on the Rocks blog. Thomas M. Gibbons Neff, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
With us from Niceville, Florida, is Rebecca Sanderlin, writer, Army wife, mother of three. She writes a weekly column for Military.com, serves on the advisory boards of the Military Family Advisory Network and Blue Star Families. Her husband is an active duty senior enlisted soldier who has deployed more than 15 times into combat zones, including about 40 months deployed to southern Afghanistan. Rebecca Sanderlin, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And with us from New York City, Ann Helen Peterson, features writer for BuzzFeed. Her big essay headlined The True Tragedy of American Sniper. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Ann Helen Peterson, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
So, zillions of people have seen this at this point, Ann. The New Yorker calls it a devastating pro-war movie and a devastating anti-war movie. You call it a tragedy. What's the tragedy, Anne?
Well, I think what the tragedy is that this movie actually encourages audiences further alienation from the war. And what I mean by that is that part of the difficulty with the American military and the relationship with the public right now is that it's so distant. So few people actually have close connection to someone who is serving that it's really easy to keep it at arm's length and to keep opinions about it really kind of impersonal. And so what this movie does is turn it into a narrative that's very easily closed. So a really classic film narrative, a superhero narrative. And at the end, you can feel good that, like, you know, this story ultimately might have ended in tragedy, but there was victory even before.
Victory, at least in the sort of mini battle that constitutes the heart of this movie. For those who haven't seen it, it turns into kind of sniper versus sniper here, Anne, right? He's got the Bradley Cooper character has a counterpart who is sniping for battling American forces in Iraq. And the conflict gets kind of reduced to who wins that battle, never mind who won or lost the whole conflict.
Yeah, and this is a really common Clint Eastwood tactic, actually. Like, if you look at his past films, he's really obsessed with doppelgangers. So having a kind of a darker character, in this case, like, actually literally darker, who shadows the main character is in many ways similar, but must be vanquished in order for the hero to win. I mean, most famously is actually probably in something like Dirty Harry. But in this film, you know, this doppelganger sniper, you know, we never hear any word of dialogue. He's just very clearly figured as this evil that is equal in prowess, but must be defeated in order for this small victory to win. And there's a real sense of true justice when that bullet comes through in slow-mo and kills this other sniper. And I think it gives you a sense of victory as an audience member in an unwinnable war.
There is talk of the home front here aplenty. There's talk of heroism and the opposite. Thomas F. Rich Lowry in the National Review, of course, a conservative publication, says this movie marks the return of the war hero. You've been there, Tom. Do you see the return of the war hero in this depiction?
I don't know, Tom. I mean, that's tough. I mean, we were just talking about earlier this kind of one versus one battle and how it's kind of reduced to that. And at the end, you kind of have this heroic moment. And, you know, the name of the movie is American Sniper. It's not American Snipers in plural. It's not platoon. It's one guy's war. It's one man's war. And that's obviously Chris Kyle. And as far as, you know, I think any war movie that anybody watches at any time kind of, you know, addresses heroism. And is Chris Kyle a hero to many? Yes, to probably himself. He was doing his job just like he was for his SEALs and the Marines out there on the battlefield and whoever else he encountered in Iraq. I mean, heroism and being a hero is such a moving target, and it's very easy to label anyone who goes overseas as a hero.
Tom, why do you think so many people have poured out to see this film? Is it because they want to understand the Iraq War? I mean, this is doing many times the box office of lots of earlier Iraq War films, The Hurt Locker and many more. And The Hurt Locker, I think, grossed $17 million. Here we're at $250 and it's only a few weeks out. Is it because Americans want to understand the war? Is it because they want to simplify the war into a neater narrative? What do you see there, Tom?
I don't know. I mean, I wish I knew the answer to that question. But, you know, it's kind of a trend. You have Lone Survivor, you have Zero Dark Thirty, you have these movies that really, you know, Navy SEALs, special operations are kind of elevated on this pedestal, like the entire war is on their back. And I think people want to see that. And I think, you know, what Anne was talking about with this superhero narrative, I mean, it's a superhero that we can relate to who wears, you know, a Bowtech hat, who drives a Ford, who kind of looks like us and talks like us, but is doing something that we can't even imagine. So I think, yeah, I think there's a little voyeurism there.
So much controversy around this. Of course, Michael Moore, who said, you know, snipers were not respected in his family tradition. They were the ones who shot and killed from the bushes or the trees. We had Seth Rogen very broadly comparing the film to a bit of a Nazi propaganda. And then here's Bill Maher, you know, saying, what's up with the popularity of the Clint Eastwood portrayal? Here's Bill Maher in real time.
Hurt Locker made $17 million. Because it was a little ambiguous and thoughtful. And this one is just American hero. He's a psychopath patriot, and we love him.
Psychopath patriot, that kind of language is all over the place here. Howard Dean weighed in on this here, said people pouring out to see this are Tea Party members. I don't know if there are that many Tea Party members. Here's Dean.
There's a lot of anger in this country, and the people who go see this movie are people who are very angry. And this guy basically says, I'm going to fight on your side, and they bite for it. I bet you if you looked at a cross section of the Tea Party and people who go to see this movie, there's a lot of intersection
and plenty of pushback on that whole front. On Fox News, Hannity last week, former Navy SEAL Jason Redmond, who was a friend of sniper Chris Kyle, said Seth Rogen and Michael Moore were wrong to criticize American Sniper. Hannity himself piled on.
When he made those shots, when he did those things, he was doing it to save lives. But it also showed the heavy burden that comes with fighting our nation's wars. And that's something I think neither Michael Moore nor Chris Rogen could ever understand.
Yeah, they're both ignorant, elitist, narcissistic Hollywood has-beens, both of them.
Ignorant, elitist, Hollywood has-beens, both of them. Things get very, very hot here. Rebecca Sanderlin, join us here. Why do you think so much controversy over this film?
Well, you know, to backtrack just a bit, I personally think the reason why this film has resonated so well with the American public is because it is non-political. You know, the previous war films seem to sort of have a political message injected into it. This movie reflects more of what I see in the military community, which is that the war itself has never been political. People have their own political beliefs, but for them, the war is a mission. For Chris Kyle, the war was his mission. And I think that really resonates with audiences. But I think it does turn off those who would like to keep this as a political narrative.
I mean, let me take that to you, Anne. You describe in your essay, you lost a close friend in Iraq who enlisted in the army, became a ranger, shipped out to the DMZ in Korea, and then to Iraq. many would say, yes, it is in fact non-political in many ways, but war itself is political. To me, watching it just yesterday, of course you can describe bravery and courage going on here, but the lack of a political context left me scratching my head thinking, well, war doesn't happen in isolation. It happens in a highly political context, Anne.
Right. Yeah, I think that, I mean, in some ways, the film really does evacuate the politics, and that we never see, other than, you know, the towers falling, we never see any of the complicated reasons that we were compelled to go to war and the complicated reasons why it was so difficult to find anything resembling victory. But I also think that, you know, no movie is actually apolitical, because every movie, every piece of art demonstrates or represents a certain, like, worldview, a certain way of viewing how war works. Mm-hmm. And so this movie can be wielded, as we saw in those clips that were just playing, in really political ways. And so I think that to say that, you know, part of the reason this is resonating, I think it's that Eastwood actually is a very skilled filmmaker and is very good at making movies that lend themselves to be read in certain ways by different audiences. So you could see this and see it as a tragedy. You could really see how, okay, this is a man who was really consumed by this certain idea of why he was going over there. But I don't think that most people are actually reading it through that lens.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the movie, the blockbuster American Sniper, why it's so big, why it has stirred so much controversy and reflection. Anne Helen Peterson joins us from BuzzFeed. Her piece, big essay there, The True Tragedy of American Sniper. You can read it at our website, onpointradio.org. Rebecca Sanderlin's with us. She writes for military.com. Writer, army wife, mother of three, her husband has done a lot of active duty. And Thomas M. Gibbons Neff is with us, operated as a sniper, two combat deployments in Helmand Province in Afghanistan, the second as leader of a scout sniper team, and yes, the rifle has been in his hands. Here's a little bit from American Sniper. Chris Kyle, played by Bradley Cooper, talks to a VA psychiatrist about his time in Iraq.
Do you ever think that you might have seen things or done some things over there that you wish you hadn't?
Oh, that's not me, no.
What's not you?
I was just protecting my guys. They were trying to kill our soldiers, and I'm willing to meet my creator and answer for every shot that I took. The thing that haunts me are all the guys that I couldn't save.
A little bit from American Sniper, boiling it way down right there, just trying to protect my guys. Yes, haunted at the same time. A lot of complexities left out, but it's a powerful film that has drawn people in, all kinds of responses. On Facebook here, Gary writes to us, there is no controversy. Kyle, Gary says, was a psychopathic, delusional, habitual liar. Fellow SEALs have remained quiet and have distanced themselves. He's brought dishonor on the SEAL organization. But Lauren Finn Jesus says, I saw it, loved it as a film, believe Chris Kyle was a hero. He returned again and again to keep us all safe from the factions who wish us dead. He served his country, which is a lot more than a lot of us can say. And when he was done, he carried his own demons but worked to overcome them. He wasn't a killing automaton, but a human being just like the rest of us. R.I.P. Rest in peace, Chris Kyle. It is fascinating, Tom Gibbons Neff, that Chris Kyle's demise is just conveyed to us at the very end of this film. Of course, he's back in the States. He had his demons, and he's killed, ended up being killed, in fact, in life by another troubled veteran who met him on a shooting range and shot him dead, Tom.
Right. I mean, it's tragic. I think post-traumatic stress, something that kind of lingers after the battlefield, is something that affects everybody in a different way. And what we have from Chris in the movie is kind of, it's a neat package. It's kind of, you know, he goes to war, he comes back, he has his issues, he finds a way to work through it, and that's with working with other veterans. But it's never that easy. And everybody, like I said earlier, this is Chris Kyle's war. You could be with someone over an entire deployment who's, you know, one arm's distance from you for 8 months, and his war is completely different than yours.
Do you want to speak to the issue of Chris Kyle himself in life? You've been in that sniper community. You must have heard the chatter. And of course, Jesse Ventura, the former Minnesota governor, has his big fight with Chris Kyle, sued him and all the rest for defamation. a big ruling there. Many others have said that that the truth has been stretched here. I mean, this whole movie's built on his memoir. What does that tell people who see the movie, Tom, about how they ought to look at its veracity, its connection to truth?
I mean, I can't speak towards, you know, Chris Kyle's actual story. You know, I did not read the book. I saw the movie. I've heard the rumors just like everybody else has heard. But, I mean, the sniper community, it's very small, I mean, especially in the Marine Corps. And, you know, we have the motto, silent professionals. And that's something that we all kind of look to. And obviously writing a book and having a movie come out about yourself isn't really to the norm. But, you know our platoon had a motto, no thanks needed, none received. You know, we operated in the shadows, and that was kind of always our deal.
Mike in Berea, Kentucky. Mike, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
First, I'd like to thank the Marine sniper for his service, Semper Fi.
Semper Fi.
The lady whose husband has deployed, thank you for your service. And 15 deployments, that's a whole lot. But I would like to say this movie is about separating the war from the warrior. And it is Hollywood. And just like the Marine just said, that everyone has a slightly different experience in war. And this is one of those outlying experiences that's being used in an artistic manner to frame a viewpoint and to kind of bring the war home. And, you know, the metaphor in this is that this man did all of this, and he was killed by another serviceman, a Marine, I believe. You know, and I think that really illustrates the need and the point to ramp up our veterans' care services. And I'd also like to correct one thing. He was a pro-social sociopath.
What do you mean by that, Mike? What do you mean by that?
So you can have a sociopathic brain, a predisposition to it. There's some really great research that has come out that the sociopathic brain can also become pro-social, which means that it does have the ability to bond to a particular group, but it's incredibly lethal to anyone else, and if we're going to use it in a military term. Because if you watch him with his kids, you know, you can't say the man was a sociopath. Exactly. Mm-hmm. He still had the ability to bond, but he went and he did horrible things. But, you know, like we say, like, you don't overcomplicate things over there. It's the guy to the left and the guy to the right, and you make sure that he can call his wife and I can call mine tonight.
Mike, I see a note here that says you are a Marine who served in Iraq.
Yes, sir.
Did you come out of this movie thinking, well, that's a anti-war film or that's a pro-war film? How did you see that, Mike?
So I read the book, and I haven't seen the movie yet except for the trailer. But I don't believe, just from watching the trailer and having actually read the book, mm-hmm. I don't believe this is a pro-war film. Like, how can anyone watch that? You know, the horror that this guy goes through and the people around him, and be like, this is pro-war. And I can't speak to how, in a theatric sense, they played the movie out with the battle with the other sniper. But I would remind everyone still, this is art from Hollywood.
Yeah, that's for sure. No question. And they show the price at home. That's a big part of it. You can see even just from the trailer how he'll be on the phone in the middle of a very hairy situation in Baghdad, talking to, at one point, his very pregnant wife at home, played by Sienna Miller. And then he's back home between tours. Here's a scene, Chris Kyle, Bradley Cooper, angrily confronted by his wife, played by Sienna Miller, as they lie in bed.
Tell me why you do it.
Come on.
I want to understand.
Babe, I do it for you. You know that. I do it to protect you.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
I'm here. Your family is here. Your children have no father.
And you'll have to serve my country.
You don't know when to quit. You did your part. You sacrificed enough. You let somebody else go.
Let somebody else go?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I couldn't live with myself.
Yeah, well, you find a way.
Find a way because she wants him home. Rebecca Sanderlin, what did you make of the home front depiction here? The strains, the tension that this brings into a marriage, a family, and how those worked through American Sniper?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, watching this movie, I actually went to watch it with my husband, and I expected that it would be difficult to watch. It really wasn't very difficult to watch because it was so cathartic. There were so many scenes in that movie that my husband and I have lived, and I think they did a fantastic job of bringing into the dialogue the idea that of what the family goes through during these deployments.
Did it seem realistic to you? It's these calls from the middle of battle zones, the middle of firefights sometimes. Was that amped up by Hollywood, or was that for real?
Well, you know, everyone's experience is different. For my husband and I, we've had those same experiences. There have been times when he's called home, and I've heard, you know, gunshots and mortars in the background. For other families, that didn't happen. It just depends on an individual service member's location and situation. But that was not a Hollywood construct. That has really happened to a lot of military families.
And put this in the context of other war films over time, films out of earlier big wars, World War I, Vietnam War, the timing of this film, where it's come out in the cycle of war. You know, we had a lot of films about Iraq that came out during that very long war that were not too popular. This one hits big. What do you see there, Anne?
Right. I mean, I think in the history of both World War II films and then Vietnam films, Korea films, I mean, and then films after the first Iraq War, any movie that comes out while the film is actually, or while, I mean, World War II, there's this actually an exception because there was a lot of, propaganda that was a collaboration between Hollywood and the government. And I don't mean propaganda in necessarily a negative term. It was more, you know, they collaborated to make movies like Casablanca, which ended with a real, like, here's why we're fighting this war, and worked really effectively. But after that, you know, there was World War II, there was just this very clear and legible, like, we are doing the right thing, and, like, here's why we're behind it. And then wars like Vietnam, the first Iraq War, the second Iraq War, and Afghanistan, it's really much more difficult to make that sort of legibility, especially while you're mired in it. And so the films that have been successful have always come several years after the fact, in that they are looking back and kind of telling the narrative, reinscribing it with meaning. And, you know, interestingly, the most successful, the canonical movies about Vietnam are all very, you know, dark and nuanced, and I mean, look at something like Apocalypse Now, and it's giving a rendering of the war, which is basically a hellscape. But with the second Iraq War and Afghanistan, you know, there have been so many movies, and all of them just dead in the water. And it doesn't matter if it is a movie that actually depicts what's going on, so something like The Hurt Locker, or a movie like, say, The Messenger, which depicts what's going on back home, or a really, you know, excellent documentary like Restrepo, which is about serving in Afghanistan. People don't want to think about it. I think there's a real, allergy to thinking about and sitting through these films while there is this weirdness of the film, of the war actually going on.
But what do you make about the fact they're rushing into it now? What are Americans looking for here?
Well, I think actually very much closure. So we are far enough away from the end, in quotes, of this war, that now we need to narrativize it and to turn it into something. So a film like American Sniper works really effectively to show that, yes, you know, there were all these problems with what happened in these wars ultimately, but look, here is a hero. Here is someone that we can hold up as a reason why we did this, as victory in an otherwise totally unwinnable war.
Tom, there were a lot of servicemen and women who went, and they did what they were asked. They did their duty and maybe exceeded it sometimes here. But if this is sort of the wrap-up, if this is closure, is it anywhere near complex enough for us to look back on this very costly war and understand it as a society?
Yeah, I think Ann touched on some really good points. And I think, you know, we look at this movie as pro-war, anti-war, but I think we're kind of giving it a pass, or really there's a category we're kind of missing, which is pro-warrior. And you kind of have that speech in the beginning, which is about the sheepdog and the wolves, which is a rhetoric.
This is his father. The flashback to his boyhood, his younger brother, sort of the weaker brother, has been beaten up. And the dad says, well, you've got your sheep, you've got your something else, and then you've got your sheepdog who'll go out and bite anybody who attacks.
Right, and that, I mean, while it's a rhetoric I don't necessarily agree with, I think that when you have this war, these long wars that have existed, and you have a professional military, all-volunteer force that has become so secluded, like Anne was talking about at the beginning of the program, you have this disconnect. You have the, you know, outsiders looking in, and now you have Chris Kyle, which is this warrior for, you know, the 21st century for America, that's kind of elevated through the status, through his sniper status, through his 160 confirmed kills. And, you know, it becomes, he gets put on this pedestal. So, I mean, anti-war, pro-war, it's pro-warrior. It's, this is what the guy looks like or supposed to look like who's fighting our wars today. Someone who feels morally justified, even though the wars are a little murky. But, you know, going back to your original question is, you know, if this is closure, I mean, no, I don't think we're even near that point of being able to close the book on Iraq. Again, I served in Afghanistan twice, but not Iraq. So, I mean, that's a tough question to answer, and I don't think we're at that point.
Bradley Cooper's character comes home. He's recognized in a lube garage by a fellow veteran from the Iraq War who approaches him and says, "You saved my life," the kind of hero worship. But you can hear he's very uncomfortable.
Are you Chief Chris Kyle?
Yes, sir.
My name is Mads. We met Fallujah. You saved my life.
They just need to balance.
I did?
Yes, sir. We were stuck in a house until you came in with the first Marines. You were the one that carried me out.
Oh, wow. Well, the Marines saved our ass plenty of times. How are you? You all right? You holding up?
Great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just grateful to be alive.
And very adulatory. Shane, come back, Shane. Steve in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on the air.
Yeah, I think it's easy to lose sight of the fact that besides being a kind of template on the war experience, Clint Eastwood's sort of oeuvre is very much rooted in the kind of Western genre, and to me this seemed like in many ways a recasting of that, you know, the
cowboy film. Sort of
cowboy also, I really agree with the last commentator who was saying it's more about the warrior values and the celebration of a very classic set of values. And I wish the film had been Clint Eastwood is a brilliant director, and I think it's, and I commend him for his ambiguity, because it allows for so many deeper readings of the film. And but I wish there was more less discussion of the war in part, and more a deeper discussion about how we enshrine and have always enshrined these warrior values.
Warrior values, no doubt that they're front and center, but also the price they pay. And can we take it out of a bigger context and still do justice to the price these soldiers and the country and Iraqis paid in this war?
Well, I think there are a lot of other films that actually do a really good job of that. You know, I mentioned the film The Messenger earlier, and that's a film about two men who go and break the news of someone passing away in the war. And that, to me, is such a rendering of, like, the actual heft of grief that goes on after the fact. And, I mean, I think that there are ways to compromise this narrative of warrior values. I think it's actually a pretty dangerous narrative of masculinity that really forwards like a certain way that a man has to be in war, to be a successful man in America. And to sustain that is not healthy.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the movie, the blockbuster, American Sniper. Asking why it's so big, why it's stirred so much controversy and reflection. Ann Helen Peterson is with us, features writer for BuzzFeed. The True Tragedy of American Sniper is her piece. Very interesting piece. You can read it at our website, onpointradio.org. Rebecca Sanderlin is with us, writer, army wife, mother of three, husband deployed more than 15 times into combat zones, 40 months or so in Afghanistan. She writes a weekly column for military.com. And Thomas M. Gibbons Neff is with us, rifleman with Marines in Afghanistan, was the second tour as leader of a scout sniper team there. Lots of response online. Steve here says, Chris, as in Kyle, is a hero warrior. Michael Moore is a coward. Benedict Arnold. It stirs a lot of that kind of passion. On the other side, Paul says, real war heroes are in Homer only. American Sniper is soothing mythology for the collective insanity the U.S. exerts and does not see. Here's a little bit from the movie. Chris Kyle, played by Bradley Cooper, wants to get down off his sniper perch, down in the streets, helping Marines break into houses. Fellow SEAL Mark Lee, played by Luke Grimes, holds him back.
Oh, the Marines. They don't get the training we do. Half these guys were civilians 6 months ago.
Well, let's coach him up. I'll show him how team guys do it. I'll leave the unit on the street.
No, we can't do that. We need you on Overwatch.
Oh, come on. If I'm on the street, Mark,
look, House to house is the deadliest job here, man. You got some sort of savior complex?
I just want to get the bad guys.
Meanwhile, at home, and now, Americans going at each other over this. On Hannity last week, host Sean Hannity, guest Jason Redmond, former SEAL, friend of Chris Kyle, joked that if Kyle were around today, he'd have an answer to Michael Moore's criticisms.
You know, Sean, anybody that knew Chris knew that he was somebody that, when he was out and about, he loved to practice his choke-out skills. So all the people that know Chris are going to laugh at this. So I guarantee you, if Chris was still walking around today and he was with Michael Moore, he would be glad to put Michael Moore to sleep.
It would probably take him about 9 seconds. It wouldn't take that long. If he could get his arm around his neck.
Great. Let's come home and put each other in chokeholds. I don't know. Kathy in Lac du Flambeau, Wisconsin. Thanks for calling. You're on the air, Kathy.
Thank you for taking my call. I went and saw the movie on Tuesday, Elder Night, and the reason I went was my dad was a sniper in World War II. He was a master gunnery sergeant in the Marines eventually.
Okay.
And then my husband's brother was a point man for Vietnam. He was Army vet.
Mm-hmm.
So we went, and it struck me that there's a certain desensitization that is needed to survive as far as your feelings. And, you know, it happens, it evolves, and it's like living in the inner city. If you don't have it, you are the target. And then the other thing was the sniper he was fighting against was actually their Olympic hero patriot. It wasn't just any person off the street. He was an Olympian, and I think that was showing that it's in each nation.
What about the psychological impact, Kathy, for the sniper, the warrior here?
Okay. It's my experience. I had a brother who did 2 tours in Vietnam. He was a Marine, and he was a helicopter crew chief. But they deny the after effects. And what happens is they go on not really living, and then they end up with bottoming out and maybe end up in the veteran's home, homeless, and eventually get counseling, and then it gives them some relief. And my dad actually went through that also. My dad was dying one time, and he had a horrible nightmare, but being Native, it would be more considered a vision of the snake coming out of his body and turning and looking at him in the face. Now, I know the Marines have in their symbolism a snake, so I don't know if it's not for me to interpret his vision or dream.
But a lot to deal with when you come home, no question, and we see some of that in American Sniper. Here he is sitting at a bar. He's back in the U.S. He hasn't even told his wife, his family. They talk on the phone.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Babe, come home, okay? You know, we miss you.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm good, but he's not. It's hard. Rebecca Sanderlin, how about this depiction of the warrior coming home? You've experienced that many, many times. People, of course, go through it in different ways. A fair depiction here? Too easy the way it's shown here? Too tough?
You know, it's such an individual thing for each warrior and each family. I can tell you that if my husband had gone straight to a bar and not even told me he was home, he would have been in very big trouble. But she handled that much better than I would have. But I do hear stories about other couples where there is, you know, a great need for a decompression time at the end of a deployment before the family reintegrates. And, you know, I think it's all a fair depiction because, like Thomas was saying, you know, from one warrior to another, the experience is really, really individual.
You know, Rebecca, you were saying earlier that it does share the way many military personnel and families experience this. It's just the mission. You're asked to do it. You go and do it. And you can certainly see that in American Sniper. But I found myself thinking as I watched it, there's so much that the families and the warriors are asked to endure here. Surely we need to think about the politics in that situation, Rebecca. You know, was it worth it? Was it the right war? Was it a war that we needed to be having? Aren't those vital questions when so much is being asked?
Well, I think those are absolutely vital questions, but they're vital questions for Congress. You know, they're questions before we go to war or each time that Congress is asked to fund the war. Those are questions that need to be taking place with our legislators. For the individual warriors, for the families, you know, we don't have the luxury of debating that, because if we personally believe it's not worth it, we still have to do it.
Boy, if you're sitting in that audience, especially if you're a civilian, it made me feel more heavily than ever the weight of your democratic participation to ensure that it is worthwhile, an important effort. Brian in Wallingford, Connecticut. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I went to see the movie about a week ago, and when I came home, my wife, who didn't want to see the movie, asked me, did it glorify war? And I said, no, it certainly did not glorify war. But like you, I thought that it did nothing in the way of closure, because it approached none of the issues of the appropriateness of the war and the whole divisive kind of atmosphere that was created by this war. It touched on nothing of that, as anybody that watched the movie knows.
You say it doesn't glorify war. There's a lot in it that's not fun, though, you know. He's a strong, noble guy as depicted here. And you must have seen, Brian, at the end, they show a lot of scenes from the actual funeral or memorial service in the football stadium in Texas for Chris Kyle, on whom this is, whose memoir this is built, with all those American flags from the overpasses on the highways, the huge entourage, and all the police go. I mean, it's pretty much a hero send-off.
I don't think that necessarily is a commentary or a kind of positive commentary on the war per se. I think it might be about the person more than the war, because I think that there's a great deal of doubt in the country as to whether the war was something that should have been fought. And I don't think watching that movie should be a litmus test. Going to that movie should be a litmus test for people to determine, to say whether they're pro or against that war per se. I think it was a good war movie taken at base.
A devastating pro-war movie and a devastating anti-war movie, The New Yorker says. Sounds like you might agree, Brian. Dave in Madison, Wisconsin, you're on.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I saw Inglourious Basterds, and Quentin Tarantino had sort of an ironic take on his film within a film, where the German propaganda team was promoting a film called Nation's Pride, and there was a private who was supposed to be a big war hero of the Nazis, who was a Gary Cooper-type character, but by the end of the film, he had turned into a monster.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it shows that it's important to have the politics and the history incorporated into the film. It can make a great deal of difference on how you feel about the character.
I wonder how much we can ask from a movie, but surely there is a whole range of depictions in cinema history. I mean, Anne, think about your friend Luke, and how would you have edited this film to make it less a tragedy and more fair to him, more true to, I mean, he ultimately died in Iraq, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there's another piece that I read on Vulture that was written by another person who had been in the war. And so many of the voices that I've heard have really echoed that it gets the feeling of being in war really right. Like the way that they filmed the streets, the way that they filmed, like, you know, even the physical pain of laying on the ground and, you know, with a rifle on your shoulder, and the way that men are with one another, that it really gets that ambiance right. And I think that Luke would have liked that. I mean, he and I fought all the time about war movies and about, you know, what kind of war movies work and which ones don't. And I always wanted, like, more ambiguity. And I think, you know, that what I would have liked to have seen at the end of this movie is a more frank addressing more frankly, you know, how the lack of competent veteran services probably led to Kyle's demise, and instead you get this very, you know, very sudden, just like the blank screen that says that he was killed, that really doesn't encourage you to think about, okay, how did like a real failure of the system actually lead to this person's death instead of even the war itself?
And of course, they needed those services because they were sent to this war for whatever right. reasons it was mounted. Max in Milford, Massachusetts. Max, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was just curious as to why they had to introduce a fictionalized account of the sharpshooter. They had this, like, enemy villain sharpshooter named Mustafa, I believe.
An Olympian, but from neighboring Syria, the film reveals to us. Yeah, he sort of jumps around Sadr City, Baghdad, like an Iraqi Zorro, and very, very good shot.
Right, and what I don't understand is why, I mean, if I'm correct, there was a fictionalized account of this between, like, you know, sharpshooting between him and Kyle, and I think that really detracts from the story, I think, the actual story of who Kyle was as a Marine and, you know, what he was doing. I don't understand why they had to introduce that sort of cat and mouse aspect to it.
Tom, anything in war reality there in a cat and mouse sniper standoff in your experience?
Actually, yeah, I on my second deployment, I was the team leader of a scout sniper team, and on the first day, we were in Marja, Afghanistan, and two of my guys were hit by an enemy sniper, and I spent the next week trying to find the guy, which we eventually did. And I think, you know, we go back and talk about the Western, the gunslinger, you know, the two sharpshooters, you know, squared off at the end of a at the end of a street at high noon. You know, it's very much just a different take on that. That kind of served well for the movie and for the genre.
Well, there's been a lot of conversation about how Iraqis are depicted here as well. I mean, there are very few speaking lines in English for any of the Iraqis. Chris Kyle's character talks about them as savages. The sniper is dark and Mustafa. What about the depiction there? Some have said the dehumanization of Iraqis in this picture. What do you say, Tom?
Yeah, I think it definitely does that, and I think there's a certain truth to that as far as being overseas in either Afghanistan or Iraq. You do a lot to desensitize yourself from the humanity of war in general. You know, in common lexicon, you know, no one gets killed in combat when you're over there. It's, you know, they got whacked or zapped. You build these words to kind of give you a little standoff from what actually happened. And Chris Kyle kind of does that. You see that in the book, and you see it in the movie when he calls them savages, which has riled a lot of people up, which is, you know, extremely dehumanizing. And whether, you know, he used that as a barrier to make what he was doing, you know, more acceptable in his own eyes. I mean, I'm who to say, but you know, there definitely is a layer of that, and especially as a sniper, you're not really interacting with the local populace. There's a distance there that's very necessary for you to do your job.
There's a little bit from a very famous Clint Eastwood film. It goes all the way back to 1992, his Western Unforgiven, in which he presents a very heavy kind of moral view on killing. I want to compare it just with a little bit from American Sniper, where he seems to have lightened up a bit on it. Here, Eastwood's character, playing an aging outlaw, Will Money, talks to a young man who was just killed for the first time in the 1992 Western, Unforgiven.
It's a hell of a thing, killing a man. You take away all he's got, and all he's ever gonna have.
Yeah. Well, I guess they had it coming.
We all have it coming.
From Unforgiven, 1992. In American Sniper, he's out with his son late in the film. They're shooting. And he says to his son, the Bradley Cooper character in Clint Eastwood's new film, it's a heck of a thing, not a hell of a thing, to stop a beating heart. That's why we're going to do it together your first time. And there seems a lightening up on killing in this portrayal. Maybe I read too much into it.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating. People, film scholars really view Unforgiven as this turning point in Eastwood's oeuvre, in that he had been like everything from Good, the Bad, and the Ugly to Dirty Harry and a string of movies in the 80s. Like, there had been a pretty specific understanding of like who should, like, the ability of the outlaw to take the law into his own hands if, you know, circumstances merited it. And then Unforgiven is just so revisionist. And I think that this film, in a lot of ways, is a throwback to that original 70s Eastwood.
With Chris Kyle and 160 confirmed kills in Iraq at the heart of this movie, lots of Americans and others around the world pouring in to see it. It's worth working out a little bit what we're going there for and what we take from it. I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. Anne Helen Peterson at BuzzFeed, terrific to have you. Thank you for joining us, Anne.
Thank you so much.
Anne's essay at our website, onepointradio.org. Rebecca Sanderlin at military.com. Thank you for being here today, Rebecca.
Thanks for having me.
And Thomas M. Gibbons, nephew, writes for the Washington Post at the At War, or the War on the Rocks blog. Tom, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.